whatever. So I don't want to debate this today.
I have a question, Mr. Chairman.
Inside joke. Representative Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I guess I'm a little bit confused about under what conditions we actually get into a negotiation. Does the administration initiate that, or does it require an application from the industry, or how does that process work under the Stranded Gas Act, and how does that negotiation come into being?
Through the chair, Representative Davies, it would begin with an application from an applicant, from a project sponsor, not from the administration.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'd like to go to, there's no other questions?
I have one. Maybe it's of the other co-chair. Help me understand, in the original Stranded Gas Pipelines Act, I remember arguing that thing, and our good friend Ramona really obviously had a big part in this as well. What caused that to terminate, to require that we bring it back up? Was it a set time? Is that the correction?
Right. I think there's a sunset, and
was
that
it
is expired.
So many days after the passage of the act or something like that?
Yeah. Mr. Commissioner? I think Representative Lowe is correct. The bill called for an application to be submitted by, I believe it was last year, and that time just expired without an application.
That's the reason we have to reinvoke it.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I guess we'll hear from Larry Pursley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Larry Pursley, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue. I could speak to House Bill 519 briefly, because I know you're short on time, and certainly I could take questions. Going back to the Stranded Gas Development Act, which was passed in 1998, it says that the purpose of this chapter is to encourage new investment to develop the state's stranded gas resources by authorizing establishment of fiscal terms related to that new investment, to allow the fiscal terms applicable to that qualified sponsor to be tailored to the particular economic conditions of the project, to establish those fiscal terms in advance with as much certainty as the Constitution of the state allows, and to maximize the benefit to the people of the state of the development of the state's stranded gas resources. The Department of Revenue certainly supports reauthorizing the Stranded Gas Development Act, which expired June 30, 2001. We certainly understand that if you're going to be laying out billions of dollars for a project, there is a problem during the construction period when you've got substantial property tax bills and no cash flow. However, given the purpose of the Stranded Gas Development Act, it seems excessive to us to waive $760 million or more of property taxes before you see how much is needed to waive, before you begin negotiations, before you find out maybe you're putting too much on the table, and balancing the needs of the project. The Stranded Gas Development Act also tells us to maximize the benefit to the people of the state of the development of the stranded gas resources. Looking at House Bill 519, the way it's written, where property taxes are waived throughout construction in the first two full years of production, which could be two and a substantial partial third year, depending when the flow begins, that's $760 million is one quarter of all the property tax revenue that we estimate you would take in on a 35-year project. Certainly, the gas line could live for more than 35 years, but if the line moves 4.5 billion cubic feet a day for 35 years, that would take twice the proven reserves that have been discovered at Prudhoe. Certainly, people expect there's more gas up there, but in making some reasonable assumptions, if there's twice as much, twice the volume of known reserves, you get 35 years, $760 million, the property tax that waived is one quarter of it. If this goes to the higher number of $900 million, which would depend, again, when production starts and when that tax waiver ends at the end of the second full year of production, $900 million would be one-third of total property tax revenues. As Commissioner Porchot explained, there is no link specifically between the property tax waiver and Stranded Gas Development Act. You could take the tax waiver, build the project, and never apply for Stranded Gas Development Act negotiating authority. That would be up certainly to the project sponsors, whether they thought they could get a good deal by negotiating with the state further on property tax production tax or corporate income tax. There would be no need to apply under Stranded Gas Development Act. Certainly, if a project sponsor applied, we could ask for recoupment of the property tax that was waived. Whether we get that or not, certainly problematic. Two last points. In terms of trusting, under the Stranded Gas Development Act, yes, the Department of Revenue would negotiate a contract for payments in lieu of taxes. Final approval of that contract is up to the legislature. We could not do it without you. So there'd have to be a mutual trust. You trust us, we'll trust you to approve it. And hopefully we could come to the legislature with a good deal for the state, a good deal for the project. To address the question about the estimate going from 500 to 700 million, if I could, originally we had looked at what portion of the property, gas conditioning plant, pipeline, and such, that would be subject to property tax, what portion of the project would be in Alaska. We first looked at it in terms of mileage of that pipeline. How many miles is the total pipe to Alberta? What percentage of that is in Alaska? And we assumed an average cost for that. That was the estimate of $500 million. Looking at it some more, working with our advisors, we realized that probably it would cost more to build a mile of pipe in Alaska through Arctic conditions, mountain passes and such, than it would to build it when you got to the flatlands of Canada. So the $760 million estimate is based on, even though there's 20% of the pipe in Alaska by mile, it would be 30% of the pipe project cost. And based on that, the property tax estimate increased. And seeing some grimaces, yes, those are estimates. Certainly happy to take questions and keep it short.
Representative Bundy, you have a question.
A question, yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is there anything in this proposed legislation that would prevent a future legislature, should they have the will, to say we need to recruit or we need more money, we're just going to raise taxes on a gas line?
Through the chair, Representative Bundy, no, I believe that's always a risk to any developer that in any given year the legislature could change tax rates.
Give with one hand and take away with the other.
Any other questions? Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Wouldn't the contract or the negotiations have to include Canadians and Alaskans with the applicable companies? You got to build all the way down through, and certainly there'd have to be something in writing from the Canadian taxing authorities or tax relieving authorities or something like that in conjunction with us.
Through the chair, Representative Hudson, certainly we can't dictate tax policy in Canada.
Wouldn't you have to work together with them when you write that? No?
Through the chair, our negotiations would only involve the taxes that are owed in Alaska. I mean, I suppose it's possible project sponsors might be asking for similar incentives or waivers from Canadian government. I'm not aware of any, and I guess if they did, the governments could try coordinating for the good of the project, but I'm not aware of any of those discussions occurring.
A requirement. Okay, that's good. Thank you.
Representative Davies.
Commissioner, could you provide us with the calculation that you went through to come up with the numbers? And specifically, I'm interested in if you could identify what property you assume was getting the tax holiday. And I'm concerned about, in the earlier versions of the bill, there was sort of a related facilities phrase, and I haven't been able to figure out if that's still in here or how it's circumscribed now, but could you comment on that issue of what is subject to the tax holiday and what's not and where the boundary line is?
Through the chair, Representative Davies. In coming up with the $760 million number, our assumption is that production would start in year six, year one being the decision to go ahead, start planning and designing, then in year six production would start, and the first two full years of production property taxes waived. We're assuming it's a $17 billion pipeline. 30% of that cost is in Alaska, the other 70% is in Canada. That in addition to the pipeline, there's a $3 billion gas conditioning plant on the North Slope. The revenue estimate, or the foregone lost property tax revenue estimate, is based on our understanding that the intent is just to give that tax waiver to the pipe, compressor stations, the downstream facilities, and the gas conditioning plant. In an earlier version where it referred to and related facilities, we felt that was ambiguous and could open up the door for a taxpayer to give it a try and get additional facilities under the tax waiver. Having just looked at work draft R or slash R that was adopted as the committee working CS, it appears there is an attempt to tighten that, to make clear that it's only pipeline and facilities related to treating, conditioning the gas for transport. But certainly, in our opinion, it's page 5. Under section 2, and it's C. In this section, Alaska North Slope Natural Gas Project means, and then it gives the definition. This is certainly better than the earlier version. Whether it answers all of our questions, I can't tell you that today.
Representative Davies?
Thank you.
Are there any more questions? Thank you. We'll expect you back.
I'll be back.
Next, we'll go to David Marquez and then Bill Allen.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. I'm David Marquez. My last name is spelled M-A-R-Q-U-E-Z. I live at 18546 Osprey Circle in Anchorage. I'm an attorney, and I represent Vico Corporation. I speak in support of House Bill 519. Just a year or so ago, when gas prices were very high, everyone thought the pipeline was just around the corner. Now reality has set in again, and the project's enormous costs and risks make it very doubtful that it will be built unless quick action is taken to keep the project going. Producers have indicated that work can continue with 3 legislative actions to reduce the enormous risks: federal enabling legislation, federal legislation that could help reduce the risk of low gas prices, and Alaska legislation that provides both an incentive and tax and royalty certainty and clarity. As to the federal legislation, some have said no federal assistance should be provided if the state is unwilling to step forward. House Bill 519 will send a clear signal that the state is willing to participate. Vico believes that if this legislature takes significant action to reduce the risks and costs of this project, we can make the pipeline happen. House Bill 519 takes 2 very important steps to reduce the risks of this project. First, with the incentive, it helps reduce the risks associated with construction costs. Second, by revitalizing the Alaska Stranded Gas Development Act, it lowers the risk associated with tax and royalty uncertainty and protects the state and municipalities. The incentive helps reduce construction costs. House Bill 519 grants a temporary exemption to the project from state property taxation and all municipal taxes for a period from commencement of the pipeline's construction through the first 2 years of operation of the pipeline. So it is temporary. It does not apply to any taxes currently being collected, so present revenues will not be affected by this bill. The amount of money saved through the temporary tax exemption reduces the cost of construction, thus reduces the tariff, and increases the royalty and severance tax. When the tax holiday is over and a pipeline is built, the state and local governments will have a pipeline in which to levy taxes for many decades. A new industry, a gas industry, will have been created. Gas for in-state use will be available. Alaskans will be employed. If it is not built, there won't be any of that. Importantly, the bill requires the producers to meet certain pro-Alaska conditions before they get the temporary tax exemption. First, it must be a Southern Route pipeline. The bill lists other conditions, including compliance with the federal acts relating to natural gas pipelines. This is important because amendments to those acts that are currently being considered in the pending federal enabling legislation are favorable to Alaska. Also included is an Alaska hire, buy, and build requirement. The bill puts back into action the Alaska Stranded Gas Development Act that expired last June. That act contemplates that the state and the producers will sign a contract that covers everything the state and the producers will need to have a successful project. And the whole process starts with the producers filing an application. That act was enacted after very substantial effort by the legislature, the industry, representatives of municipalities, and the administration to encourage the development of an LNG project and make sure the state and municipalities are protected in the process. The CS to HB 519, the working draft, makes the act also applicable to a North Slope gas line as well as an LNG project and extends until April 1, 2004, the deadline for the producers filing an application for a contract with the state. For many years, the state and the oil owners were locked in costly antagonistic disputes over severance tax and royalty issues on oil production. The risk associated with tax and royalty uncertainty is one more risk that burdens this already risky pipeline project. The Stranded Gas Development Act provides the opportunity for the state and producers to negotiate tax and royalty certainty. This will benefit both the producers and the state. The producers have testified that they will be ready to begin negotiations, file an application soon after this bill is enacted. And it only makes sense that they would. For one of the big risks and one of the big prizes out there for the producers is tax certainty. And the Stranded Gas Development Act provides the opportunity for the state and the producers to reach an agreement that may be 35 years long and provide the stability that would help the producers and others invest in this $20 billion pipeline. But just as important to the state and municipalities, the Stranded Gas Development Act provides a great process for the state and producers to negotiate the total fiscal regime for the pipeline that would be in the long-term fiscal interest of the state while accommodating affected municipalities. The Act very specifically gives the municipalities an important role through the formation of a municipal advisory group. Quoting from the Act about the contract, quote, the terms should provide the state and affected municipalities with a significant share of the economic rent of the approved qualified project. And it is important to remember the legislature retains the power to authorize execution of the contract. There is additional protection for municipalities. The Act empowers the DOR Commissioner to negotiate contract terms that provide for periodic payments in lieu of taxes that otherwise would be imposed by the state or municipality. Under the Act, the Commissioner has to include a term in the contract that provides for a portion of the periodic payments made in place of taxes have to go to the economically affected municipalities. Under the Act, the producer's contract application must contain a description of the satisfactory terms under which the producers will make gas available to meet the state's reasonable gas demand and must include rules regarding expansion. The producers must also furnish a detailed description of how the increased demand for public services and other negative effects caused by the project will be mitigated. Now, there has been testimony before the legislature that reflects important agreement on certain issues about this bill. First, it's recognized by experts that some incentive is necessary for this project. Second, the experts also tell us that a property tax exemption is the most leveraging of the available incentives. Where there is disagreement is at what point the incentive should be granted. There may be concern that this will be seen as a giveaway and that instead the state should negotiate with the producers before any incentives are given. BECO feels a great sense of urgency and feels strongly that the incentive should be granted now. If action is not taken this year, the only opportunity for a significant boost to the state economy may be lost. If we take a year or two or three to negotiate any incentives, the opportunity may be lost as the producers move on to other projects. The Stranded Gas Development Act will protect the long-term fiscal interest of the state and municipalities. There will be time in the coming years under the Stranded Gas Development Act to negotiate a total fiscal regime. But BECO believes concrete action must be taken this year to keep the project going, or it may be decades before the opportunity arises again. BECO also wants to make it very clear that it does not consider this to be a producer bill. This is an Alaska bill that provides for a short-term investment by Alaska that will pay off in a project that could be shipping gas, employing our citizens and contractors, and boosting our economy for perhaps even 100 years. Thank you.
Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Marquez, in your experience in the petroleum industry, have these kinds of incentives been used in other development projects to develop petroleum or gas?
Certainly fiscal contracts around the world are a tool that are used to help encourage development in other countries, and oftentimes those contracts are structured so that they're not front-end loaded, so that during construction, et cetera, there is an opportunity for lower taxes and a different fiscal structure for later or during periods when the project is more robust. I'm not aware of any in the United States, but in the gas, oil and gas industry, but certainly communities around our nation offer incentives for businesses to locate in their state or municipality.
I never did understand why they'd pay bribery to have professional basketball or baseball, but that's their choice. As someone who's worked in the oil and gas industry, trying to structure a question about this negotiating, whether you negotiate first or just say, yeah, we want to be part of this on an upfront basis. I'm just wondering if you think if there's any doubt in producers' minds that we will certainly offer encouragement to develop the line, and that now that we're discussing it, there's really nothing to negotiate because we've already admitted up front that we're willing to do these sorts of things. I guess I'd ask you to put your producer's hat back on and try to share with us what a producer's point of view might be regarding a lack of negotiation.
Through the chair, Representative Bundy, I haven't been with the producer now for a little over 3 months, so maybe things have changed, but it seems to me that there is a great prize out there for the producers on this very risky project, and they will want to enter into, they will feel very compelled to enter into negotiations with the state to achieve that prize. And yes, there's whatever the property tax exemption is going to be, and that's going to be very valuable to them, but I think of more value is going to be the prize of the possibility of tax certainty and stability and clarity over what could easily be a 35-year project. And if they can attain that, they will feel much better about the project, and substantial risk will be have been reduced. And I think that that gives the state tremendous leverage in the negotiations, is the hope that the producers will understand exactly what the economic rent going to the municipalities and the state is going to be over the life of the project, even if there are formulas within that contract that may go off prices or whatever. But I think that the opportunity for stability is a great prize, and one that the state can offer as a real valuable part of the negotiations.
If I might, I have often maintained in discussions with producers that Alaska is a little bit like a woman scorned. I guess you can mess with us once, but if you do, we get ugly and rain all over your parade. Concern that we might be leaving too much on the table. If you could address that, putting your producer's hat back on again, that you reap a perhaps unjustified profit early on, what are the dangers that a future legislature would seek retribution?
Well, first of all, I think through the chair, Representative Bundy, I think first of all that that is exactly what the producers will bring the producers to the table, is the opportunity under the Stranded Gas Development Act, and that was one of the most important objects of the Stranded Gas or targets for the Stranded Gas Development Act, was the opportunity for stability over the life of a project. And if that could be negotiated and approved by the legislature, I think that subsequent legislatures would have legal difficulty in changing that fiscal term for that project. And that's why the negotiation is so important, and why, if you look at Article 4, an important part of the Stranded Gas Development Act is the provision by the producers of lots of information about the project and market conditions, etc. So when the state and the producers enter into this contract or enter into negotiations for the contract, the state will have a lot of information It will have as its target the long-term fiscal interest of the state and the municipalities, and it should be a very tough but hopefully successful negotiation that will provide real stability for the project, and that's what the producers will want.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Davies.
Thank you. You cited the provisions in here relating to Alaska Hire, and as I read them, they're generally all qualified with it has to comply with valid federal, state, and municipal laws, and that within the constraint of law, and those kinds of terms. And of course, the problem with Alaska Hire versus, you know, State Hire is that you can't require it in the law. So really, those laws are pretty, there's a certain amount of job owning, but they're pretty weak in terms of their actual legal application. The only really effective way to implement Alaska Hire, in my view, is through a project labor agreement. And could you tell me what VECO's position would be on negotiating a project labor agreement for this project?
Through the chair, Representative Davies, I think that Alaska Hire, while it is in this bill, and in fact, VECO probably would like VECO Hire buy and build, I think that the true fact of the matter is that there is going to be more jobs than Alaskans can fill during the construction of this project. This is going to be a mammoth project requiring thousands of skilled laborers, probably more skilled laborers, maybe even undoubtedly more skilled laborers than that need work in this state. It'll be a very good project. I don't think that a project labor agreement would be necessary for this project. And in fact, could be a mandate that could put still another burden on an already risky project by requiring a certain type of labor when there's going to be an opportunity for everybody to work, and it will help the producers if there's not a mandate in that area.
Representative Croft.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. David, good to see you again.
Good to see you.
Would it help the economics of the project? Would it make the project more viable if we agreed to give up our severance as well?
Through the chair, I'm sure it would help the economics to give up the severance tax as well. And I suppose that it is possible that during the negotiations, as everyone looks at the long-term fiscal interest of the state, and there are, if you look at the Stranded Gas Development Act, if you haven't already, you'll see that there are a lot of different factors that need to be balanced. But we've heard from the experts that it's really this property tax that is the most leveraging and would most likely result in a project going forward, and would also result in higher severance tax because it would lower construction costs.
You mean because it is the property tax starts to be paid before there's any oil flowing, any gas flowing in this case. And so throughout the whole term of the construction, they're paying it and they're not getting any profit until they start pumping the gas.
That's correct.
Why did you choose, or VECO choose, a holiday instead of a deferral of those? I understand under the federal legislation, some of the tax breaks that are considered there are paid back if the price of gas is over the $3.25 threshold. If they're making good profit, if you will, $5 gas, $6 gas, then they start to pay back some of those tax credits. Why was there no mechanism in here for a repayment of these property taxes?
Because there is, excuse me, through the chair, Representative Croft, I believe there is a mechanism for repayment, if you will. I think the Stranded Gas Development Act provides the mechanism whereby the total long-term fiscal interests of the state and the municipality are protected by the terms that are negotiated for the contract under that provision. And so that could come in many different forms. It could, conceivably under the Act, come back in terms of an actual repayment at some point during the time of construction, I mean, during the time of operation, perhaps during periods of high gas prices or whatever, or it could come in the form of later increases in the corporate income tax or later increases in the severance tax or periodic increases in the royalties. Everything is on the table in the Alaska Stranded Gas Development Act. But VECO wanted this very leveraging start so the project work would continue, so that the producers this year would start applying for permits spend more money than they already have and keep this thing going for a couple of years in hopes that, and then the negotiations would be going on in the hopes that, some agreement would be reached and we'd have a pipeline.
Those kind of things that you were talking about would come through the negotiations?
Mr. Chair, yes, Representative Croft.
And on the local hire issue, private companies can agree contractually to do things that they could not be required to do by law, constitutionally. Is that right?
Through the chair, yes, there are opportunities for voluntary programs.
So we could ask for things and companies could decide to agree or not that we have no power constitutionally to require.
For example, through the chair, Representative Croft, for example, under the Stranded Gas Development Act, there are provisions for Alaska Hire and that act also that do encourage the commissioner to seek voluntary programs.
Should I move to add to this a severance holiday as well?
Through the chair, Representative Croft, I do not believe that that is necessary, but I think that every incentive that is offered increases the chance there being a project started.
As you said at the beginning, it would increase the economics and increase the chance that it would be done. How do I know when I'm offering too much? How do I know when a project would have been viable and I didn't need to give away all of the state's severance or even, I guess, at some point, agree to sell my royalty gas at zero to help this project along or give it a $1 billion subsidy? When and how do I know when I've given just enough so that I've helped make it viable, but not so much it's just going directly from the people's return on their common ownership to the bottom line of corporations?
Through the chair, Representative Croft, I think you'll know two things. If there's no project, you'll know that you haven't given enough.
Okay.
If there is a project, you'll know during the negotiations of the Alaska Stranded Gas Act exactly what the total, as much as you can know at any given time about the future. You'll know what the economics are because under Article 4, as I cited before, you'll see Article 4 of the Stranded Gas Act, you'll see that there is the opportunity for the Department of Revenue Commissioner to get all sorts of data, and the parties will be negotiating and exchanging a lot of data. And I think that's when you'll realize if that upfront tax incentive was too much, and you can attempt at that point to negotiate a solution to that that too big an incentive, if you will.
Do you have any? How much more do we have here?
Three or four more questions. They're all directly on the points here of this issue, Mr. Chairman.
I have a list of people here that wish to give public testimony. I believe he'll be here tomorrow and the next day if we can.
Okay, I'll try just for a couple more. Still, I'm a member of this committee that can ask questions, right, Mr. Chairman?
I understand that. I'm just trying to move this along. We have people that came to town that. And people online that also have, we have to be respectful too.
Sure, it's a very important issue, and I'll try and get through them as quickly as possible, Mr. Chairman. Is it possible under this bill, if we passed it, that the project could be built without those negotiations? That is, can they take this tax holiday and not go through this negotiated provision? Build it without it.
Through the chair, Representative Croft, yes. But as a practical matter, I would say almost absolutely not, because the other issues that are out there are so important that I can't believe that the producers would want to go forward with the project without knowing what all the other taxes, what the total fiscal regime is going to be. And they've already stated that in testimony before other committees, that they will be coming in for negotiations on the total fiscal contract if this legislation is passed.
If they did the project without the negotiations that aren't required here, but you think are likely, I would never know whether I'd given too much because those disclosures in Section 4 would never have happened.
Through the chair, there is some risk of that. I think you have to balance that risk against the non-tax benefits that come from this project, which could be 35, could be 100 years worth of a gas industry with lots of employment, lots of opportunity for taxes, and the ability for the legislature without a contract to re-examine the tax structure yearly And I could imagine that any time the legislature decides that maybe we ought to tax this gas pipeline differently, at hearings you would be getting a lot of information and the opportunity to see information. So I think that the threat of possible yearly changes to the tax structure or frequent changes to the tax structure is the reason why the producers will want to come in and negotiate.
Mr. Chairman, you're going to have him back then another time? That's your plan?
We can.
Well, then, if you'd like to, I'll hold some of those questions for later on, if that's what you'd like, Mr. Chairman.
I have just one, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Harrison Hudson.
Just really quickly, David, thank you for your insightful testimony. I don't know if anybody's asked you this question or not, but I've had it approached about access. In other words, if somebody struck gas someplace, it wasn't in Prudhoe Bay, but it was on access to the pipeline, what would be the provisions involved with them being able to tap into the line to move their gas down the line?
Through the chair, Representative Harris, my understanding is, first of all, that would most likely be a federal matter, since the pipeline will be regulated by FERC. But you'll notice in the Alaska Stranded Gas Development Act that there is provision for the producers to come forward in their application and during the negotiations with a plan for expansion of the pipeline. And that door gives the state the opportunity to negotiate that in the Alaska Stranded Gas Development Act.
Thank you.
To that point, if I could, Mr. Chairman. And that's one of the concerns that I've heard, is that some of the smaller producers who may have gas that want to tap into it, it's your belief, Dave, that under the Stranded Gas Act, that through the expansion rule, the state would be able to protect the interest of the small producers and to be able to access and put their gas through the pipeline, correct?
Through the chair, Representative Mulder, access, of course, is an extremely complex issue, having a lot to do with the complexities and the risks involved in a group of people first building this very expensive pipeline. But my reading of the Alaska Stranded Gas Development Act, where it talks about expansion rules, means that opens the door for the state to put that on the table during the negotiations.
We have one more question here, Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Nice to see you again. I enjoyed working with you over the years. The initiative that's going to be on the ballot, how would that affect this? It seems to me like if that were to pass, the people would be essentially telling us go strictly to Tidewater, and this whole arrangement here, would that preclude us from working this contractual relationship?
Through the chair, I don't have great familiarity with the initiative, but my understanding of it, and I certainly could be corrected if I have the wrong impression of it, is that it empowers the state to look whether or not the project would be feasible. And then if it is feasible to start an organization toward working toward it. I think that the beauty of the gas pipeline is that once it's constructed, there is the opportunity for spur lines, if somebody can make a go of that project, that would give you the best of both worlds.
Thank you. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Bill Allen. You got anything else I can put in this water?
Only if you share.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bill Allen. I'm chairman and CEO of the Vico Corporation, Alaskan company with its headquarters in Anchorage. I'm going to have to tell you guys that I can't talk with a damn, so I had an accident last summer, and so my speech is sometimes is broken, and I have to speak real slowly. And I'll do my best and submit reading text testimony to fill in any gaps. I will have my Vice President, Rick Smith, if you would, for him to read my testimony. But these are my words, and it'll go a lot faster if I can do that, to let Rick to write it. But before he starts, I'd like to say this thing. I'm not here to speak for the producers. They didn't ask me to do this. I'm an Alaskan. Alaskan who has fought right along with all you guys for local hire, for jobs, and for your future.
Thanks. Mr. Chairman, Rick Smith, Vice President, Vico Corporation, and my address is 3601 C Street. Bill's testimony. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, it is a pleasure to be here with you today, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you on an issue of great importance to Alaska. You've heard arguments both for and against parts of this bill. I think all the testimony has been submitted with the genuine interest of Alaska at heart. There's not a person here who doesn't want to see a gas pipeline. Where differences do exist, they involve how best to maximize the benefit for Alaska, and that is a complex issue without an easy answer. Because the benefit can't be measured simply in terms of net revenues to state and local governments, taxes collected minus incentives given. The formula must also include evaluation for the thousands of new jobs and billions in economic activity the new Alaskan gas industry would generate. I want to repeat that last phrase, the new Alaskan gas industry, because what we are really talking about is creating a whole new industry for Alaska. True economic diversification. As you know, there aren't many other diversification options knocking on Alaska's door. But we know there's enough gas on the North Slope to fill a pipeline for the next 50 years, and probably for the next 100 years. A pipeline that would generate 250 to 300 million in revenues each year for the state. That means over its life, this project would ultimately generate between 12 and 30 billion dollars for the state of Alaska. And that is only counting the direct tax benefit, not the jobs and collateral economic growth. But there's a serious problem with my math, or any math. Right now, we don't have a gas pipeline. We are not collecting any taxes, creating any new jobs, or effectively diversifying our economy, but not for a lack of trying. Governor Knowles, like his predecessors, has tried for years to negotiate terms that would get this project underway. Many current and past legislators devoted countless hours trying to find a way to make the gas line a reality. Sometimes through carrots, and sometimes, well, through Ramona. And yet, we have no pipeline. Instead, Prudhoe Bay is declining. Alaska's traditional mainstay industries, timber, mining, and fishing, are locked in a struggle for their very survival. In short, our economic prospects are looking pretty grim. There's no doubt Alaska desperately needs a pipeline and the jobs and economic stability it will bring, and we need it soon. A few years ago, with prices soaring, it seemed like the project was a sure thing. Unfortunately, the economics have drastically changed, and so has the strength of our hand. I don't think anyone would argue that we are in a better bargaining position today than we were a few years ago. In fact, our position is much worse. Because at current prices, this project simply doesn't math out. Plus, international competition increases every year. Producers have made it clear that without state and federal incentives, they can't justify investing up to $20 million in a project that carries with it such a tremendous risk. In response, our congressional delegation is working hard to pass the necessary federal incentives. They have recently told me that it is very important that Alaska quickly do the same, because our opponents in D.C. are now pointing to the lack of state action and saying, if Alaska doesn't care enough to offer incentives, why should we? Producers have stated that the incentives in this legislation, combined with federal action, would be enough to get this project started. The passage of Representative Pete Cott's HB 519 would send a clear signal to producers and Washington that Alaska is willing to step up to the plate and invest along with them in the future. As elected officials, you must decide what incentives, if any, are appropriate. But as you make that decision, please bear in mind that the value of this project to Alaska should not be measured simply in terms of taxes gained or taxes lost. Consider also the thousands of jobs, tremendous long-range economic growth, and future prosperity this project can bring. Some argue that Alaska should bargain first and offer incentives only later. I would suggest that we have been bargaining for many, many years, and we still don't have a pipeline. Alaska's economy is struggling, and the market for this product isn't getting any better, and likely won't. Too many other countries are anxious and able to fill that void. How much longer can we really afford to continue talking before this unique chance to secure Alaska's future simply slips away? As you weigh what Alaska is willing to invest, please also weigh carefully what you are willing to risk. A window of opportunity is still open if we act now to help make this project a reality. But I strongly suspect that if that window shuts, it may never open again. Thank you, and Bill would be very glad to answer any questions.
Any questions? Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
Next we'll have Ken Conrad.
On the phone line?
Yes. Ken?
Yes, thank you very much.
Yes, state your name for the record, please.
Yeah, my name is Ken Conrad. I'm Vice President of Gas for BP Exploration here in Alaska. And I'm here this afternoon to testify in support of House Bill 519.
Okay.
Creating a supportive government framework is an essential ingredient towards developing a successful ANS gas project. An international project of this magnitude brings many inherent risks, and governments working constructively with industry can play a major role in reducing these risks by setting clear and predictable rules under which a project would be undertaken. BP, with our partners, has previously laid out key government actions that would facilitate future investment on this massive undertaking. Specifically, a clear and efficient U.S. federal regulatory process, and indeed, much progress is being made with the Alaska gas provisions currently part of the pending U.S. Senate Energy Bill. An efficient and predictable Canadian First Nations regulatory process. BP remains very active working in Canada to establish such a process, and progress indeed is being made. And finally, a simple, clear, and predictable fiscal framework in Alaska, such that the massive long payout investments being contemplated can be undertaken with the knowledge that the rules won't change. House Bill 519 would be a positive step towards achieving the necessary fiscal framework in Alaska. The bill is modeled after House Bill 393, which was passed in 1998. As we did in 1998, BP continues to support the content and approach inherent in the Stranded Gas Act, which this legislation refreshes, updates, and makes available for a gas pipeline project. House Bill 519, in combination with the Stranded Gas Act, would first demonstrate leadership and intent by the legislature to provide stable fiscal terms that encourage development of ANS gas while fully and fairly compensating the people of the state. It would establish a protocol beginning with an application and followed by a process to exchange information between investors and the state. It would empower the state to enter into a contract negotiation to achieve clear and simple tax and royalty terms. These terms would need to be subsequently approved by both the executive branch and the legislature. It would provide a process with the state and investors while providing for municipal input, and it would provide for contract review, approval, and termination provisions, inclusive of municipal input, legislative authorization, and judicial review. The bill also provides for prioritization of state agency support for a qualifying project. In aggregate, it would set out a thoughtful and workable framework through which important fiscal issues can be dealt with, subject to subsequent approval by the legislature. The bill also encourages Alaska higher training and purchasing. BP has and continues to support the use of in-state capability. However, some technical modifications should be considered to ensure the bill's language does not draw legal challenge. The most recent changes to the bill are certainly an improvement in this area. However, additional modifications may be needed to avoid counterproductive legal challenge. House Bill 519 would send a positive message to investors and provide a framework to achieve fiscal clarity and predictability, and BP is fully supportive. I'd like to just add a couple comments based on some of the earlier testimony and discussion that I had heard around the property tax holiday and the notion around subsequent negotiations, and I just wanted to make very clear to the committee that, one, it would fully be BP's intent to enter into such negotiations, and that basically by definition those negotiations are not complete until both parties agree. So any agreement that's reached with the state, of contracts, payment in lieu of taxes, etc., by definition requires the approval of both parties. So if the state feels there's a need to recoup or modify, would certainly be the case, and also that the whatever is agreed in that contract is subject to legislative approval. And I guess the other thing is just to set a little context in terms of there's a possible tax holiday here measured in, according to DOR, of hundreds of millions of dollars, and that lies in contrast to, by our calculations anyway, certainly tens and tens of billions of dollars of future state revenues on the back of this project. So I just wanted to put that data in the room for your benefit. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions that the committee may have.
Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's my understanding that there was some recent congressional action yesterday, last night, that was should be one of the components of making this project more viable. Could you comment on that and any impact it would have on BP's view of the gas pipeline and this legislation?
Yeah, I think yesterday was another positive step. We've said for quite some time that the federal enabling legislation is vital, and it seems to be moving in a good direction, and we're hopeful that it will ultimately, the energy bill will ultimately pass out of the Senate and be reconciled in conference committee with the House. I'm not sure exactly how long that will take, but I think it appears to BP anyway that it has a lot of positive momentum behind it, and it's a very positive development. And if it was approved, it would kind of complete one of the three legs of government framework that we've been talking about, with the other two being the Canadian regulatory process and of course the state of Alaska fiscal clarity that this bill would address.
Thank you.
Representative Croft.
Ken, are there provisions in the federal legislation for repayment of the tax credits under certain situations?
The bill as we read it, well, it's not clear that there are any tax credits. The tax credits, as my, our understanding is that they only kick in the event that there are low prices, and then in the event that there are very high prices, there is a repayment mechanism, yeah. It's not clear that, I mean, the federal government, I believe, has estimated payments out of that bill to be zero, so it's not certain there would actually be any tax credits from the federal government to start with.
They've estimated that the price, they don't think the price will fall below 325, so they don't think they'll be giving the credit, but if they do, there's provisions for repayment.
That's my understanding, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Next we'll go to Joe Mursack.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joe Marushak. I'm Vice President of A&S Gas Commercialization for Phillips. I have written testimony in front of you, but Ken said a lot of what I wanted to, and I've heard some other things here, so I'm just going to hit some of the high points here on this particular bill and the legislation. Phillips, for some time now, has been working on the Washington issues. We felt the Washington issues are probably the most critical component into being able to know if we can move forward with this project to begin with or not. So we've been working on the federal enabling legislation. We've been working on the federal fiscal legislation. Yesterday was a good day for us. The tax mechanism was brought into the Senate Energy Bill. The Senate Energy Bill is not out of the Senate yet, to my understanding, but we're hopeful. It was a very positive step. We still have to go to committee with the House and work out any issues there are in there, and the House does not have these provisions. But we are very encouraged at this point in time by what we're seeing out of Washington. Those two issues are absolutely critical for us moving a project forward. The third item that's critical for us moving the project forward is a fiscal certainty with the state. And I've heard some question about would we use 393 if we got the tax mechanism. Fiscal certainty is a requirement for us to move forward. We have to know that the deal doesn't change. When people talk about $20 billion, that's $20 billion today. When you actually invest that money, that's $30 billion, maybe more than that. It's a very risky project. It's a very, very difficult project from a rate of return standpoint or from an economic basis, and we need to have fiscal certainty. So, yes, I am. Where Phillips is in support of Bill 519. We believe that the mechanism to achieve fiscal certainty is extremely important. The ad valorem tax issue is also important. We've spent a lot of time in Washington. The highest members of our organization, the Phillips organization, myself, many of us have spent time in Washington. We are continuously asked by Senate Energy, by Democrats and Republicans, what is Alaska doing? You've come to us, you said you need a federal price floor mechanism, you said you need legislation, what's Alaska doing? In my view, this ad valorem tax holiday addresses that particular issue. There's also an issue out there of the holiday covers construction plus 2 years. What's the point of the 2 years? Well, when we bring this project online, we'll be bringing it on at roughly half rate. And the reason for that is because we need more compression than we can get in the period of time we need it. So we'll have a ramp-up period. The first year will be at roughly 2 BCF a day, maybe 2.5 BCF a day. During that first year, we will continue with construction. So we'll be adding the additional, you know, billions of dollars of construction still in adding that compression in there. The other reason for 2 years that I can see anyway is that once you bring these online, all these compressors are in series. A problem with one compressor affects everything down the line. And I think you have to plan on some problems with the new project. So it's going to take us a couple years to get this thing lined out. Those couple years are going to be pretty tough. The ad valorem tax holiday then provides a financial incentive. It helps the project along. I'd like to be very clear, it will not be the one that takes you over the top. It's one of a series of items that we need. It helps move the project. It increases the rate of return. It increases the wellhead price. Does it cost? We've heard the state say it costed $700 million. I would point out that there is already a repayment mechanism in this already, because when we get the ad valorem tax holiday, it reduces the tariff. That increases the severance tax. It increases the royalty. And roughly a third of that value comes back. So it helps the economics, sends a clear message to Washington. We're in support of the bill. We think it's important. We also think it's very, very important that Alaska comes together on this issue. We're going to have a lot of time, a lot of need to negotiate. We're going to have a tough year. 393 is not going to be easy to work our way through that. But we need to make sure that we're on the same page here. It's going to be a tough project for all of us. We want to do this project. We think these three items, plus the fiscal incentives, we put this all together. You add into it the railroad bonding issue. You add into it accelerated depreciation. We think there's a plan on moving this project forward, and we ask for your support. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Are there any questions at this time? Thank you. Next we'll go to Mayor Boyles. The honor.
Hello, this is Rhonda.
Yes.
Thank you.
Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Rhonda Boyle, Fairbanks of the Fairbanks, Mayor of the Fairbanks North Star Borough.
Okay.
Thank you for having the hearing. Thank you for I had a better appreciation of you doing what you do after serving as mayor for the last 18 months. What HB 519 is asking for, as well as SB 3, we're all asking for things like clarity, certainty, stability, and predictability. The producers need it, the pipeline companies need it, the state of Alaska needs it, and the citizens and municipalities need all of that. I would be a pretty short-sighted mayor if I did not support property tax exemptions during a construction period to gain from that investment the possibility of 35 years of property taxes and certainly some clarity, certainty, and stability. We in the interior need desperately natural gas and the benefits it could bring. And I believe it's incumbent upon us in leadership to view this project with a practical and responsible vision for the next 50 years. I believe it is equally important that we establish an environment that is conducive to economic development and diversification. And we must make our decisions with the term economic incentive as part of the negotiation platform. We have to send a message that the entire state is open for business. To me, it's quite simple. I support economic incentives. Prior to becoming a mayor, I was a business person, and I know what large investment in the interior of Alaska means. And it's quite practical for me to understand, too, that although our average mill rate is 15.5 mills, if it's based against a zero pipeline, no pipeline at all, then I'm going to collect nothing. Oh, I don't think we should be really quick to discount the fact that the municipalities will be willing to come to the table and invest. What is more important even than the investment and within the interior, if the pipeline is constructed within 5 years, that would be approximately $14 million. If it goes to the 2 years after that for a waiver or deferment, that could go up to $20 million. But what is equally important is a mechanism that the municipalities have a seat at the table. We need a seat at the table long term. When the TAPS fiscal clarity, if you want to call it that, was determined, and the process in which we could assess the oil line and collect our property taxes, when that was structured, the municipalities did not have a seat at the table. Consequently, on an annual basis, the borough, the state, and the producers are pitted against one another in determining assessed value. That is an inappropriate posture, and we're important. We're out there to support economic development. We're front line. Our governments are on the front line. And I think a seat at the table in determining long-term what happens to us is critically important. If the municipalities that come to the table with something, state comes to the table with something, the producers and the federal government, as well as the pipeline companies, I believe we can have a gas line. And I would just simply ask you to please set aside any agenda, political territory issues, personal desires, and please consider the future of a state that we all love and work for. We need a grand line, and we need you to continue to be the statesman you are and sit down with the affected parties and business partners and make a gas line project viable and a reality. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Have any questions?
Thank you.
John Elwood.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is John Elwood. For the record, I am Executive Vice President, excuse me, and Chief Operating Officer of Foothills Pipelines Limited. I'll speak today on behalf of the Alaska Northwest Natural Gas Transportation Company. Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding that you have a copy of my written testimony in front of you, and with your permission, I will not read that, but I will just try to summarize the main point. Is that acceptable?
Yes. Yes.
As you know, we have an active right-of-way application now being processed by the Department of Natural Resources, and during our movement of that right-of-way application, we have determined that there is an issue out there that we would like to have some further clarity on. In that respect, Foothills has suggested an amendment to HB 519 that would clarify and confirm the ability of the Commissioner of Natural Resources to phase the administrative review under the Alaska Right-of-Way Leasing Act. And that this would, if done, would permit action on our pending lease application at the earliest practical date. We believe that this change is both necessary and would add clarity and practicality and predictability. Now, the lease application, there's a lease application for the use of state lands for a gas conditioning facility for the Alaska Highway Project, which is also currently pending under the Right-of-Way Leasing Act. What we're asking is that the commissioner be given the authority to separate those two leases and consider them on independent timeframes. There are several reasons for pursuing the lease of the conditioning facility separately. One, the timing of the ground disturbing activities for the conditioning facility differs from that associated with the linear pipeline, and also the stipulations appropriate for the linear pipeline, we believe, will differ significantly from those that are appropriate for the conditioning facility. At the present time, there are considerable uncertainties with respect to that conditioning facility. Until the commercial negotiations with the North Slope producers are concluded, it will not be known who will construct and or own that facility. It will not be known whether custody to the gas would be transferred at the inlet or the outlet of the gas conditioning facility, or to what extent the existing North Slope facilities might be used in conjunction with the conditioning plant. We appreciate the willingness of the sponsor of HB 519 to incorporate this very important amendment in the committee substitute that is before you today. We believe that its adoption will provide another important indicator of the state's support for providing a clear and expeditious path for moving the North Slope project forward. And that concludes my testimony, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? Thank you. Next we'll go to Ken Thompson.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Appreciate the opportunity to provide comments on House Bill 519. For the record, my name is Ken Thompson. I'm president of Pacific Realm Leadership Development in Anchorage, Alaska, located at 3601 C Street, Suite 1400. Past experience, celebrate 30 years of natural gas industry experience next year. Most of that with ARCO. As you know, I've worked every major gas basin in the United States, Alberta, and several foreign countries in the natural gas business. Currently, though, I'm on the other side of the table, and I want to speak to you today just as an Alaskan citizen. I do support House Bill 519 if there are three important changes or clarifications made to the bill. Number one, I would suggest and recommend to the legislature that ensure an approved gas project is underway by April 1st, 2004, or yank the tax incentives off the table. If such positive incentives as the tax exemptions, which are worth hundreds of millions of dollars, are indeed approved by the state, I believe the state has the right to insist upon a quicker decision to move ahead with a gas project or pull the incentives off the table. Representative Cott mentioned a date was amended, my suggestion, to April 1st, 2004, and I appreciate that date being inserted. It really references, though, the some of the negotiations and application under the Stranded Gas Act. I think the bill should be clarified that it also applies to the tax incentive and the tax relief. Importantly, when the producers run economic scenarios within their offices and they review the data with their corporate executives, and I've been in those meetings many times, they will have to state that the benefits of this act are lost if real action, that is, investors' board of approval of a project, is not taken during 2003 or early 2004. I think the state has to add such tough consequences of not moving ahead with an approved gas project and pull those $500 to $750 million of positive tax relief without quick action on the producers and pipeline companies' part. I urge you not to pass 519 without a firm line in the sand like what I'm referencing. This year is the 25th anniversary of the startup of Prudhoe Bay, and yet there are still no natural gas sales. I believe the state has given the producers more than reasonable time for meetings, studies, and speeches. If these tax exemptions are given, and I think they should be, the state should ask for one thing in return, and that is an approved project underway by April 1st, 2004. I would not grant tax relief unless a project's underway by then. A second point of clarification, and I did submit written testimony, I won't go over all of that, but highlight it, is grant the property and sales tax exemption only to a well-defined gas project, that is, only to selected gas conditioning facilities in the main gas trunk line. Representative Cott mentioned some amendments on page 5, and I can certainly provide input on that. I think it should be strengthened somewhat by saying and being clear about what is not covered and not exempted, and in the written testimony, I provided some possible wording there. The third element, the third change I would recommend be seriously considered, is limit the outright incentive exemption from property and sales tax to the period of the pipeline construction only. However, do allow the Act the consideration for an additional 2 years of tax exemption after gas line startup based on A, negotiation of that additional two-year tax exemption with the commissioners in the calendar year of startup, and at that point, pipeline investors must show economic need for an additional 2 years of tax exemption. Maybe in the way of discussion, Mr. Chairman, in regard to this last issue, I think this is perhaps the most controversial part of House Bill 519, is this outright granting of hundreds of millions of dollars of property tax and sales tax exemption without gas project investors having to show economic data verifying the absolute need for tax exemption to achieve an acceptable rate of return. You know, I've heard proponents argue that the state must grant the outright tax relief to help make the project viable and to send a strong signal to Congress that the state is doing its share to help the gas progress, or gas project, so Congress will be more inclined to pass federal incentive legislation. Opponents of the bill, and we've heard some today, they argue the state should not give away hundreds of millions of dollars of tax relief without gas project investors actually showing the economic calculations and the need. And they argue that it should not be granted for any period after gas pipeline startup. It's interesting to keep in mind that once gas sales start, the tariff, if the tariff is $2.50 per MCF, we don't know exactly what it is, that might be in the ballpark. At 4 billion cubic feet per day, the pipeline investors' revenues will be $10 million per day, or $300 million per month. During the ramp-up period, that may be reduced in half or so. This is a complex issue and it's controversial, and so I propose a compromise for the committee to and the legislature to consider in 519. I do believe the state should grant this substantial incentive to help jumpstart the gas project because there are billions of dollars of investments at stake. when I was at ARCO several years ago trying to make the gas project happen, I must admit that I did think the property tax during the years of construction was an unfair tax. In foreign countries, I haven't seen that. Usually the revenues to governments come in way of profit sharing after startup. But I do not think there should be tax exemption after the calendar year of gas sales startup without proof of economic need. So here's a compromise. I would grant the property tax exemption during the construction and through the calendar year of gas line startup. On the other hand, at the time of startup, allow for the producers and the pipeline investors to come in at that point if the factors are such that there's been some setback or problems and the rate of return is not good at that point, then they could ask for an additional 2 years of property tax relief. Some have asked, what's the payback? The state's going to give up $500 million. Are we giving too much on the table? Again, this could be mitigated somewhat by giving the exemption only for the time of construction. Don't give it beyond that point, unless there's economic need shown. But I will say, we need to think bigger picture. I think this could help jumpstart the project. As an example, we need to keep in mind this starts a huge natural gas industry in Alaska. The USGS has estimated that there could be as much as 60 more trillion cubic feet of natural gas to be discovered on the North Slope. If we get a gas line, if there's only one big field discovered of only 5 trillion cubic feet. As you know, the existing reserves are 35, but let's say there's a discovery up to 5 trillion cubic feet after a gas line is in. The royalties off that 5 trillion to the state would be worth more than $500 million, allowing us to recoup this tax incentive that we gave during the period of construction on property tax. So I think the state does have a way to get that back through new discoveries that will indeed take place. Mr. Chairman and representatives, I thank you very much for the chance to provide the input. I would ensure three things. An approved gas project is underway by April 1st, 2004, or yank this tax and give nothing. Number two, grant the property and sales tax exemption only to a well-defined gas project. Clarify that language. And then number three, make it only during the period of construction, but do allow an additional 2 years if at that time economic need is shown. And I do think that we've come to a point that we need to get to a common goal, and that is the state helping assist a gas project that actually gets approved and completed by a consortium of interest of investors. Many of us, Mr. Chairman, and the state are tired of studies and future promises. It really is time for action by the state and the federal governments, but it's also by the producers, the pipeline companies, and other investors who should stop talking and start building. And I'm one Alaskan who's for gas to the states in 2008, and I could even live with gas down the line in 2009. And I do think approval of House Bill 519 with these three changes or clarifications I've mentioned could certainly play an important role to get this thing off dead center and moving. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Next we'll go to Steve Cleary.
That'd be just fine after 99.
Mr. Cleary, Steve?
He's not on it.
Okay. We have Pam LeBeau.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Pam LeBeau, and I'm president of the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce. And in 2 minutes and two paragraphs, I'm going to tell you what 35 local chambers and more than 700 businesses in Alaska think about House Bill 519 and the importance of this legislation. This is one of our very highest priorities. Urging the legislature to offer incentive and to encourage the producers to proceed with the development of a southern gas line route through Alaska. Alaska absolutely needs a gas pipeline. For our members to have their businesses thrive or even just stay viable, Alaska's resources must be developed. It sometimes seems that people outside of our state have more to say about what happens here than we do, and with the defeat of ANWR last week, there are no other large projects, economic development projects, on the horizon. So what is the state going to do to encourage economic growth and to try to have a hand in our own destiny? While the final results of the producer study haven't been released yet, it should be apparent to everyone that this is a project of enormous cost and risk. The state and local governments would benefit greatly for years to come if we can encourage the producers to take the risks inherent in this huge project and develop the North Slope gas resources. The temporary gas exemption provided by this bill should be looked upon as an investment by the state and the municipalities to encourage the producers to go forward with a project that will create jobs, benefit municipalities, spur economic development and opportunity for businesses, and start a whole new industry, a gas industry for Alaska. By revitalizing the Alaska Stranded Gas Development Act and having it apply to this project, the state and producers can create a contract that will assure tax clarity and certainty and protect vital interests of the state and affected municipalities. How often does the state have an opportunity to take such a bold step to encourage large-scale economic growth? The state should be less concerned with perhaps giving away too much and more concerned with not missing a significant opportunity for economic growth, perhaps the only one in the next few decades.
Thank you, Pam. Thank you for waiting. We have a Division of Oil and Gas, and I'll hold off and invite them for question and answer if it does come up. That's all the public testimony we have right now, and I'll close public testimony at this time. And we will bring this up again tomorrow afternoon with an invited testimony or people to testify if you would like. We will work around that area. For tomorrow, we heard House Bill 399 yesterday, and we'll hear it again tomorrow. Mechanical Code, House Bill 287, Entry Permits, Senate Bill 266, Hatchery Loans, and House Bill 519. I don't know what order as of yet, but that's where we are. Nothing more to come before this committee. This committee stands adjourned.